Well, let's forget the bells and whistles and the music this time. This is a God Journey Extra, my continuing conversation with Jessica and Kyle Rice. This is about Game of Thrones right after its finale had aired, and some of the lessons that might be in that work of fiction for those of us who think about power and leadership and how it works in a human sense and how it works in a godly sense. Here's Kyle and Jess and me.
Yeah, now for the big stuff, man. You're a Game of Thrones guy?
Oh, man.
Oh. Oh, you're a Game of Thrones girl.
We are, yes.
I called you here because that's, you know how sinful it is to watch a show like that?
Yeah.
I mean,
perverted and...
slightly unnerving that my ringtone is the theme song from Game of Thrones.
So you're just right out there with it. See, Sarah, Sarah and I started watching Game of Thrones, and I know people are watching, listening to this, are going to say, you guys are going to go to hell for that. You know, when I was pastoring, I had a lady tell me that I'd shared an illustration from a movie and in a sermon, and she came up afterwards to say, what are you doing? I said, what do you mean? You going to movies? I said, yeah, is that a problem? She said, yeah. She said, Christians shouldn't be saying movies at all. I said, you know, it's a PG-13. She said, my husband left me because of a G-rated picture.
No.
And I said, what are you talking about? She said, yeah, you were watching it. It was one of those princess movies, whatever. And he fell in love with the princess. And I'm going, you know, I'm not thinking that's the reason he left her.
Yeah.
I'm really not.
Yeah, I think there's a little more to that story.
But, Sarah and I, we had people in our life talking about Game of Thrones all the time. And I told Sarah, you know what? My son's talking about it. My son-in-law. We probably ought to just give it a look and... And it really is. I mean, if you don't have freedom in your walk, I always encourage people, walk inside your freedom, man. If you don't have the freedom, the first few seasons of Game of Thrones, there's a lot of violence.
Yes, yeah.
But there's also a lot of, I would say, pornographic sexual imagery.
There's
a huge controversy. And
it's a big controversy.
Why it's actually...
They cut it back some.
Yes,
yeah, quite a bit.
But you know your acting aspirations. I always said, my worst day, if you had a parent of a student, of a child who wanted to be an actress, and she told you she got a part on Game of Thrones, it would depress you to no end.
Because
they all end up naked on screen. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have the freedom, don't go there. But it's kind of a cultural... something or other. The Game of Thrones has just kind of been
a movement. Yeah.
Cultural dialogue.
It really is. I say I have an excuse because I'm an actress.
Oh, you had to watch it.
It's research.
That's what everybody says. But in honesty, Sarah and I watched it. Sarah and I we got started on it, and I'm always intrigued. As it was Lord of the Rings, I'm intrigued with stories of human power and how we sort out power.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, the last show was just, the last episode aired Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I thought, man, I knew you were a real, you know, passionate, both of you, really passionate about this thing. How did, and I'm here to evaluate how the writers did, but what did you think of it, the ending?
I think the last season was a little bit different than
that's
the
what
rest.
Everybody's saying.
Yeah. And the writing, the cinematography, the director, just all of that is incredible. I really think it's a beautifully written story. I think they could have shot it differently.
Yeah, I'd love to see the G-rated version.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones. Yeah. That would be awesome for some people.
But at the same time, if you think about it, back in those days, not that we...
In a fictional land.
Right.
In a fictional era.
But it kind of mimics the Middle Ages.
Right. And it's that really could have been reality. I mean, it was for women in... that time. We didn't have a voice. We didn't have a right to say anything. Honestly.
Unless you were the evil queens and then you're just killing everybody you could.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, vicious people that you were.
But just to be able to... Oh my gosh.
No, that's great.
But to be able to see that and then just see somebody's art and view on how to put that together, it really is beautifully done. That's what I have to say about it.
That's
the
cool.
Last season... However, I feel like they stretched it out and just added a lot of minutes.
And some people weren't happy with the ending, but I always say to people, you know, whether people like The Shack or like The City or like whatever, you know, some artist has put together something that has encaptured multiple hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people. Millions of people.
Yeah. Yep.
And so you may not like the way they did X, Y, or Z, but really go then write your own. You know, people who never have written anything.
Right. And what is it that they did differently to actually capture that amount of people's attention?
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting.
And what I thought about the last day, this is what fascinates me always, is can the person who brings freedom from tyranny be the leader to let people embrace freedom? And that question comes up in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
How the power twists.
Yep.
Comes up in this. Everyone who gets close to, quote unquote, the Iron Throne and going to be leader of all, you become, power inherently corrupts the human spirit. And I even think of, you know, President Bush going into Iraq and we're going to give them the freedom and get rid of their dictator. And it's a horrible dictator. And we're going to give them freedom. But you can't say Iraq's any freer today than it was,
right?
No. In any real sense.
Yeah,
they're quote unquote more of a democracy politically, but oh my gosh, the tyranny that exists, and this introduces the same thing. The woman character who is liberating Westeros from all these generations of horrible leaders becomes a horrible leader in the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's always been my argument with people who think they can take good people, white-hatted people with the white hat, black hat, racial overtones of all. I don't mean it that way, but just we always think young people I've talked about want to go into ministry and use the same mechanisms that have been used before by saying, you know, I just think the wrong people are in charge and we'll put better people in charge. Mm. And my answer has always been you put better people in charge and they become the same people.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
Because you're manipulating systems in a way that ultimately are going to hurt people. No matter how good-hearted you started out, you've got to manipulate a system to get people to do what you think is their best interest. And I recently heard a podcast that talked about there's not been a dictator. We always think of dictators as these megalomaniacal, whatever that word is, people who just want to be the best, just want to be in charge of everything, take all the benefits for themselves. And what they were postulating was that that's not true of most despots. What they really do think their vision of the world is better for everyone. And so that drives them to do what they do to make other people fit into that scheme. And I'm going, boy, that's what I've always been afraid of.
Yeah.
It's not just Stalin, some horrible, wicked guy, just couldn't wait to go kill a bunch of people. He just thought he had the best way for people to live together. And if you're in his way, he has to kill you because if you have the best system, then you've got to kill people. Well, and that's what happened here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And what makes me thrill with that, I sit back and say, how did Jesus then, right? Because Jesus comes, the King of all. He's got the authority. He really wants to liberate us. And he does it in a way that doesn't make him that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He could have come with a sword and a horse and slain the Roman Empire and, you know, done all the warfare. But then he becomes the same thing that the Roman Empire is.
Yep.
I faced that in the whole church situation, get kicked out 25 years ago. And that is, I could win this battle, but I have to become that guy to do it.
Yeah.
I have to become that guy that's willing to sacrifice friendships in the name of outcomes. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I don't know why I couldn't do it. I look back and I wish I could have done it. My life would have been easier. In some ways, it would have been less real in the ways that God has taken me on from that moment. But How did that intrigue you, the power dynamics? Kyle, is that something you think about when you watched it?
Yeah. So, okay. So this is a brief spoiler alert. If you haven't seen the last episode.
Yeah, just turn this off and go away.
Yeah, you might want to stop. But so this is the conversation that's taking place as Dany, the queen of dragons, has now,
very
she's walking into the Iron Throne room, and she's standing looking at this thing that she dreamt of and was told stories of as a child.
Yeah.
And this is the dialogue that takes place between her and the character Jon Snow. And she said, "We can't hide behind small mercies. The world we need won't be built by people loyal to the world we have. The world we need," and this is Jon Snow speaking, "the world we need is a world of mercy. It has to be." And Dany replies, "And it will be. It's not easy to see something that has never been before, a good world." And Jon replies, "How do you know it will be good?" And Dany's response is, "Because I know what is good, and so do you." And Jon, he says, I don't know what that is. And he responds, "What about everyone else? All the other people that think they know what is good?" And Dany's response is, "They don't get to choose." They don't get to choose.
Yeah, there's the tyranny right there.
And so, like, the first part of what she's saying is, like, it's not easy to see something that has never been before. I love that line. Like, there's so much truth in that because, I mean, even looking spiritually, we talk about, like, the garden and people wanting to move back to the reality of the Garden of Eden or, you know, living this ultimate church experience of community, but then we're building it on human systems, right?
Yeah.
And so So then there's this whole dynamic that's going back and forth. And the thing that I was left with, the question that I was left with, and I'd love to hear what your guys' thoughts are on this, is offering choice loving? Is offering a choice loving? Because, so, you know, that was kind of the dialogue or the question that I felt like was going on here. Is like, well, no, the most loving thing that we could do is to not give them a choice because they don't know what is good. And so, you know, so then we're going to make the choice for them and we're going to create this world that they've never seen before, et cetera, et cetera.
And then it's Stalin.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden we've got Hitler or Stalin or whatever, you know.
Oh, it's also God in the garden, isn't it, right?
Absolutely.
Do I give them a choice?
Yeah.
Or not give them a choice? Is it loving to give them a choice? So the answer is, of course it is.
Correct.
Yeah. That's what Father decided.
That's what he chose.
Would it have been easier for God not to give us choice?
Yeah.
Universe runs better, sure. But then he doesn't end up with the people he desires.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People who, where love can only exist where there's choice and where there's desire and where there's willing to surrender what you've got. So, yeah, I think choice is loving.
Yeah.
What the question is, how do you make society work?
Yeah.
When you have free people, I just say, okay, just do whatever you want, and then people rob and pillage and cheat and steal, and now you're going, okay, well, that you can't do that. So you got to put some bumper guards in the gutters, so people don't unduly take advantage of other people. But then where the human history is, we don't know where to stop that.
Yeah.
Once you start deciding, well, we're going to take the bad guys out. Well, then we can make good people better good people if they follow our rules. And
correct.
We become a society. We always talk about the rule of law, which is then, you know, how many laws do we have now in the United States versus how many laws we had 150 years ago? We just keep adding them by thousands every year. And it's just, we're going to make society better because everybody's going to do this. But somewhere we know we've crossed people's sense of will and choice. And then you become, even a democracy can become despotic.
Mm-hmm.
And I know people don't get that because, you know, it's everybody, we're getting to do what we want to do. But if you had free vote about some things, the democracy, we would vote oppression on the minority.
Yeah.
We have over our history.
Yes, we have.
We definitely have. And so the idea of, does love involve choice? Yes. Is it a loving thing to do? Yes. It's also a horrible thing to do to yourself, to let people learn to love. I mean, from God's point of view, that's not Jesus coming as the Redeemer. It wasn't, I'm going to clean up society here. I'm going to kill all the bad people and give good gifts to all the good people. I'm going to open a door for the kingdom to live within you and for you to embrace a different way of living in the world. We get killed for it? Yeah, well, the founder did. So, we get killed for it.
Exactly. Yeah.
But it's going to teach us something about love that has the capacity to change the world.
Mm.
And to me, that's the hope of that no human power can do. Is one of the themes of the last season.
Yeah,
was also maybe the person that desires power is the least qualified to have it.
Yep, mm-hmm. yep.
Which I would fully just jump on that bandwagon and say, look at our politics of the last 50 years. maybe 150 years.
Yeah.
I remember our first president, George Washington, was depressed when they told him he was their first president. He didn't want to be. He wanted to just go back. He'd been general. They'd won the war. He just wanted to go back to Mount Vernon. And when they came and told him he'd been nominated president, it was the thing he feared most. He didn't want to be.
Yeah.
And then at the end of it, leaves it. When people want him to be president longer, he leaves it. And I look at our society, and right now you have to have an outsized ego to even think of running for president.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to get it for yourself, and you've got to destroy other people in the process. And now you take politics to love, you've got to mock, mimic, and belittle people who don't agree with you.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's why we've written Language of Healing, to kind of say, there's a better way to talk to you. No, it's not politically successful. We're not offering perhaps the politically successful way to talk to people.
Not going
to
win the next election.
But you may win a friend.
Yeah.
You may be able to have friendships with people who see the world differently than you and not regard them as your enemy.
Yeah. Mm.
And in the Game of Thrones or any human attempts, and I mean, it's fiction, but it mimics, like you said, it mimics a lot of the Middle Ages stuff. And there's a whole lot of what mimics the current age
current
stuff,
society,
not by weaponry and modernization, just by greed and ego. And I've got to win over you and I'm going to destroy you ever I have to. And then you have a common enemy. So you can gather together enough to defeat the common enemy. And then you turn back on each other again. And it's one of the things they say might be wrong with American society. We haven't had a common enemy for a long time.
Yeah.
So now we're just picking each other's bones and picking each other apart. But one of the things I found interesting, I don't know if you were going to comment on the choice and loving thing. I'm sorry, I probably overtalked you there, Jess.
Oh, no. No, I do. I agree that it is loving to have a choice, because that is what our father did, and it broke his heart, you know, but it's still the loving thing.
It's a loving thing, but then you've got a mess in the, you got a mess in society.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then the evil people will dominate the righteous, which is a theme of scripture.
Yeah. Yeah.
As long as you're in the world, you won't have trouble. People who do harm to you will think they're doing God a favor.
They just all need a hug.
That's truer than you know. A friend of mine, Dave Coleman, also had a look at the city for me. And one of the things he wrote back, he said, you know, the one thing the world misses is just someone who loves them enough to take an interest in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the door opens. But most of us, some of us seem to live just these self-preoccupied lives. We don't get to love people in that way.
Mm.
One of the exchanges that I wanted to kind of pick your brain about, Kyle, was Tyrion, who's in prison, and he's trying to talk John into taking a whack at the queen because she's turned mad and destructive. And he used this quote, love is the death of duty. Which, you know, the thing we know we're supposed to do. And loving, he's talking about romantic love, right? He's talking about, you know, how many dumb choices men and women have made because they've been in love. Yeah, and not doing the right thing. And then John responds and says, oh, no, John says that. Love is the death of duty.
Yeah.
And then Tyrion says, well, sometimes duty is the death of love, which means you need to do what's right to the person you love, which means taking her life in this scenario they've set up.
Yeah.
And I thought about that. I thought, you know, they're talking about romantic love. But when you use just love, like, is love the death of duty? Is that statement true? Does love mean you won't be responsible?
No.
No, I wouldn't think so.
No.
So that, and this, again, what I see in the whole Game of Thrones at the end of it is how completely off the rails Jesus and God were in redeeming the world.
Mm-hmm.
Because in Christ, love and righteousness come together. So doing what's right and the loving thing. But he's not talking about romantic love, right?
No.
Where people make dumb choices. Now, if I really love you, I'm going to do right by you.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm doing right by you, that's what love really is. And I just thought that's an interesting thing. That love is the death of duty, which is ugly. But to say death, duty is the death of love, so I'm going to do what's right and whack people.
Yeah. Redemptive violence, that always works well for us.
So. It just made me appreciate the way Jesus engages our world. The kingdom, he comes. He guards the realms of men, to use a quote. But he does it so differently. It's not the right-handed power of human effort and energy.
Yeah.
It's the left-handed power of loving and serving graciously as God makes himself known in the world. It's slower. Mm-hmm. It's less efficient. But it will change the world. And the other only changes us in our attempts to change the world.
Right.
We become the oppressor we abhor.
Yeah.
Because we think we know best. And if we get society in our hands stuck on it, we'll make it the best it can be.
I would definitely agree that it's slower. I don't know about less efficient. And I think it depends on your definition of efficiency. Because if we're talking about mass producing people that believe the same thing, then yeah, absolutely. But the when Jesus stepped in and engaged with someone's life, so the conversation with the woman at the well, no matter what she did, no matter what decision she made after that, her life was never the same again. Her view of the way that God might engage with humanity's heart would never be the same again.
Right.
Whatever choice she made after that, whether she went back to the other guy that she was with, whether she, you know, left him, I mean, whatever choice she made there, her heart was moved and shifted in a way that was undeniable. And so, yeah, as far as mass production, no, it's not efficient. But when you come down to deep, long-lasting, radical heart change, there's no comparison. No comparison to the way that he chose to do it. Now, by all of our systems in the world, and I even numerous times in my conversations with him, it's like, why wouldn't you do it either faster or do it my way or do it the way that I want it? You know, but at times, like, it's so disorienting, and yet I walk away and I'm like, well, I'm never going to be the same again. Like there's no way that my heart is going to leave this encounter unchanged.
Yeah.
Because there is no other way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the point. The efficiency we talk about is only external, right?
Correct. Absolutely.
And then it doesn't really change people or change the world in the long term if you're just imposing a solution
yep.
by human power from outside. So the only way for society to be changed is for people to be changed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's the only way for that to happen is for God to do something on the inside that's just amazingly wonderful and tender and invites them into a different space. And then whether that leads them to better external results or worse, it's not going to matter so much because that love of Christ holds them in spite of what circumstances may come their way.
And I think that's one of the why people think that it might not be efficient or that it doesn't work is because often at times after that deep or after a deep heart encounter with Christ, your life might look a lot messier from the outside, right? Like it looks like it's more chaotic.
Almost always, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
When you're just keeping your outside world kind of managed, you can look really good and it can be really... And those are the people that look really good until they fall off a wall somewhere.
Yep.
And the internal, when that begins to find its way out and now people aren't pretending, does that look better? Rarely. Not for a while.
Correct. Yeah. Absolutely.
In the long term, it will. In the long term... People who live loved, people who find. I had a guy this last week wrote me and he said, every time I hear you say, you know, it takes a couple years for you to whatever, find your footing. He said, I just laugh because I know it takes decades. And my response is, I think anybody that's on this journey a while knows it takes decades, but I'm really just talking about finding your footing. I'm not talking about getting it all figured out. It's just finding, oh, I can live this differently. But I said, you know what, by the time people actually get their footing, then they're more relaxed about how long it takes.
Correct.
But the very beginning when you can't see it and you're just begging God to change this, begging God to change that, and he's not doing, as you said, what I just absolutely know would be the best possible thing God could do, and he's not, it's because he's doing something so much more endearing, and he's doing it in a different way rather than just imposing his will or his desire on us. He's inviting us to come. One of the themes of the city, this is a kingdom best explored, not explained. Mm-hmm. We've just explained it to death to people.
Yeah.
We all know in our heads logically, this is what the relationship with Jesus looks like, blah, blah. No, you've got to wake up in the morning and explore. You've got to invite Jesus in. Show me. Help me learn. And it may take weeks or months to recognize where God's leading or guiding you. But having that conversation with him until the reality begins to seep in there and then discover how to walk that. That's the challenge. And everybody wants a God we control. I've got a guy that I read his blog. He's got a thing he's writing called The Elusive God, which is a pretty romanticized term. You know, it's like God's not at our beck and call. That's not how this relationship works. There's times when God visits and makes things clear, and there's times when I'm not sure what's going on here at all. He's still with me. He's not elusive in the sense I just visit, you know, a weekend, a month or something. No, he's always there. But he makes himself known in ways that we don't control. And if we can recognize when he does and flow with that, then life goes pretty good. If we're over here just saying, no, do this. This is what you... And quoting scripture at God, you said you would do it this
way.
I
mean, this is your promise.
I've just found quoting scripture at God rarely does any good. You know, quote it at the devil all you want to. That's how Jesus did it. You know, God's a different story. God knows what's in there. It's not new to him. But us learning to explore... this kingdom, the adventure of an exploration, a podcast we did last fall when the maps run out, the whole idea of, you know, which was the theme in the last one too. I'm going to go beyond the maps, was what Aria said. The adventure is where this journey takes reality, and people who want the certain road, just give me a map, Kyle, I'll follow that map. You're going to struggle for a long time because there isn't a map to give you.
Yeah.
How God wants to make himself known to you.
But there are plenty of people out there willing to offer you a map.
Oh, yeah. Sell you a map.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
At a good discount.
I've sold a few of those maps in my past, but yeah.
And yet that's the hard part. And I think that's one of the things that has been so challenging for people who are trying to step out of the religious system and into living loved and this conversational intimacy is that there are so many people around them reaching out with these maps and saying, here you go. Like and often some of them, you know, they're living a life that looks very appealing, that looks like they're living loved. And so, you know, trying to sort out, well, is this counterfeit? Is this person for real? Is this an authentic map? And yet the people that I've found that really are walking that out, it's not really a map. It's just these are some of the characteristics of what it looks like to walk with God. You know, I don't know for certain what it's going to look like for you, but these are some of the experiences. These are some of the characteristics. These are some of the traits that I've experienced, but I'm willing to walk alongside of you in it.
Yeah.
And that's,
I love that.
Yeah. Just the people that don't hand me a map with a destination, but they might hand me, I don't know if the audience listening has seen a topographical map, but if you look at a topo map, it's all contour lines. So yeah, there might be some layout of some of the landscape that's around you. There might be some layout of the terrain. You might know where a stream is at. You know, you might know where there's a beautiful meadow. Like you can look and say, oh, there's a meadow there.
Right.
But there isn't a clear-cut destination. There isn't if you follow my five easy steps, this is exactly where you're going to end up. You're going to have a jet and you're going to be flying all over and you're going to have all kinds of quiet time in your private airline.
Wow. So. Wow. To make it fun again. That tube full of demons is coming back up right here. But one thing we learned from the Game of Thrones, if we started watching it early, Sarah and I have only watched it the last 5 months, so we kind of blitzed after Christmas and caught up before the last season began, but we named our dog wrong. We'd have named our dog Arya for sure, because we've got a little golden retriever that looks as sweet as could be, but she kills everything that gets in our backyard. Sarah caught her eating a rabbit the other day in the front yard, which grossed her out, and she catches squirrels, and where we're gone, she just dug up a whole section of our yard. Somebody sent us a picture. She ferreted out a whole nest of squirrels. So Sarah and I decided if we'd gotten that dog, we'd have named her Arya, because that's just...
And see, we were very tempted. We've got a albino husky. His eyes are not red. They are blue, but we have an albino husky. And I mean, he just looks like a ghost. I mean, it just...
Ghost.
Ghost would be an appropriate name for him. Yeah. But, and especially since he also likes running away and then come back.
Missing part of an ear? No?
No, not that. No, he's like younger. Season one or season two wolf. Ghost. Not season six or eight ghost. Yep.
Oh, wow. I don't know about you, Jess, if you spend as much time with clothes dies during Game of Thrones as my wife did, but no. Sarah's always yelling at me, "What is going on? What is going on?" Because she's hearing all the screaming, so I've had to describe the action to her. Yeah, she hates those real tense, brutal, head chopping moments.
First or second season, more so because of feeling uncomfortable of how they were shooting some of the stuff,
all the exploitation.
Yeah. I was just like, "Really, is that needed?" You know, but.
You can sure see how, this is not even really the Game of Thrones, but the whole, you're an actress, so you've been in that world, but the whole Me Too movement and how women get exploited.
Yeah.
They get paid to do the same thing on camera.
Yeah.
That they can then, is wrong in private. Then why is it right on the camera? Why do we pay a woman to be naked on a set, all these guys gawking at her, and then somebody touches her afterwards, and now I'm not getting paid for this, and it's just, it's a mess, isn't it?
But honestly, it's like if I said no to some of the things which changed my career and my path.
Yep.
And so I'd still stand by if somebody was to do something to me. I'd be very upset.
Right.
Yeah. You know, but so maybe it's just the difference in.
I'm just talking about what we celebrate on camera.
Yeah. Right. Yep.
Is exploitive.
Right.
So why are we celebrating it on camera? I'm not saying we should change what happens in private. I'm just saying. If we didn't do that on camera, the people behind the cameras are exploiting.
Right.
But we do.
And even to the degree, like a mainstream, you've got mainstream actors and actresses that are, I mean, that I think Game of Thrones could easily, especially the first seasons, be characterized as soft porn. How explicit.
Well, in my world, it was hard porn, but okay.
How explicit a lot of it was, you know. Mm. And yet, if you're a quote-unquote porn star, there's a whole nother stigma that is around the porn industry and porn stars.
Right.
But then we have mainstream A-lister actresses and actors that are 95% of the way to that level.
Yeah.
And they're celebrated as... You know, as these people to model your life after. They're Oscar award winning.
Yeah.
But you don't see any Playboy bunnies on the Oscar award winning stage.
Or do you?
Or, that's true. Fair enough.
Okay,
I don't know.
We may have beat the Game of Thrones to death, which means we won after all.
Yeah.